This episode of the Intelligent Rebel Squadcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., a trillion dollar nation. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we have been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up, rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order a copy of Black America, Inc. today.
Mama told me, ay, not to sell work. Mama, 17, 5, same color t-shirt, white. Mama told me, ay, not to sell work. Mama, 17, 5, same color t-shirt.
Yo, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, you intelligent, rebellious people. It is your boy, your host, Doe Dudes, coming live again for episode 16.5 of the Intelligent Rebel Squad cast. This week, today, Black Rednecks and White Liberals 2017. Now, for those of you who do not understand or know what Black Rednecks and White Liberals are, it's actually the title of an amazing book that I just finished reading about a few weeks ago by a man of the name Thomas Sowell. Okay, I'll teach you guys more about him in the bulk of this episode. But this book blew my mind. Historically blew my mind. I did not know all of these facts about American history when it pertains to white and black race relations. Okay, in my childhood, they told me that whites were up here, blacks were down here, and it seldom, if ever, mixed. And that throughout the entire time of Black American history, Black people have been subservient, second class, less than, etc., etc., while white people reaped all of the benefits, and while white people dominated, massacred, raped, killed, pillaged, all of that stuff. That's the only thing blacks did, that's the only thing whites did, and that's how America was in the antebellum South, that's how it was in the antebellum North. That's how it was throughout the entire country. That's what they told me. My man. And I call him my man just because of how many gems he's given me. Thomas Sowell said, not so, though, dudes. That's not what it was, B. It was way more nuanced than that. Okay? It was way more complex than that. So I'm like, all right, Thomas. I'll read it. I see what you got to say, bro. And man on me. The man brought facts. He got sources, he cites them, even some of your favorite black people like W.E.B. Du Bois and countless others. So, I decided to break this into three parts. Today, we're going to be talking about cracker culture. We're going to be talking about the redneck culture and where it came from, how it permeated. Okay? So stay tuned. And as always, you already know what you got to do to get ready for this episode. Roll something. Light something and get ready for the Intelligent Rebel Squad.
Yo, nigga poppin' with a pocket full of cottage. Hey. Whoa, chemo, sabbat, chopper, aimin' at your noggin. Hey. Had to call the addict, then the chopper had to chop it. Niggas pocket watchin', so I gotta keep the rocket. Ay. Mama told me, ay, not to sell word. Mama, 17-5, same color t-shirt. White. Mama told me, ay, not to sell word. Mama, 17-5, same color t-shirt.
So, like I said, man, I hope y'all are ready, man. I hope y'all ready for some truth. I know I am. I know I was. So, y'all already know how I give it up. Y'all know how I, process things. Y'all know how I think to a certain degree. because, you know, I put it all out there on these podcasts, you feel me? If anybody knows anything about me, is that I want the truth. I want the truth. I don't want any, you know, sugarcoating. I don't want any of that, especially when it comes to history. Now, you guys will remember that I did 14-5 in episode 14, and those dealt with, you know, integration, history, et cetera, stuff that people in my generation are now using as fuel to talk about, you know, how they can't get ahead. You see plenty of articles. Like, I was just reading an article yesterday where Forbes magazine is now talking about how home ownership among black people won't make a dent in trying to get richer than white people. Now, we already know that when we start seeing news articles or magazine articles start speaking on white, black comparison, that already lets you know that they're doing this for marketing. They're doing this for clicks. They're doing this for popularity. You know, they understand that right now racial tensions are high in America, and they want to get clicks. They want to be able to sell ads. They want to be able to, you know, have people go to their website and read their content. Now, when we're talking about that, how is it that when we're talking about comparing wealth or comparing education, comparing anything that goes on or has anything to do with prosperity, it's always white and black? It's never white and Asian. It's never black and Asian. It's never Asian and Hispanic. It's never white and Hispanic. It's never black and Hispanic. It's never those things. It's always just black and white. And that's based upon the fact that if you factor in that white people, certain white people had a head start, you will always be able to come back to the fact that black people will never be as rich as whites, or black people will never get over this hump or whatever. They're able to use that just because of the statistical fact that white people were more prosperous in number than black people were historically. But the thing is, when we're talking about historically, Asian people have surpassed white people. When we're talking about the household income of black Americans, that has gone up. I said 138% over the last 50 years, but I actually went back and looked at that study. That was actually in the last 10 years that the black household income has risen 138%. I am citing the Nielsen Company Consumer Report of Black Americans. It's a fact. You dig? So because of that, you'll see all these articles bringing this stuff up. I recently had seen another article by, I'm not sure, maybe the Business Insider, another one of these publications, where they were saying the same things along the lines of black people will never be able to amass wealth like white people and all other garbage. You dig what I'm saying? And you'll have people with blue checks next to the name of people that are supposed to be believed and trusted, or you go to them for the source of information. You go to them for the facts. They just keep saying racism is the reason. Racism is the reason. And that is such a childish argument. That is such a childish argument, because when you say racism, that means 100% of one race and 100% of another race has to be on board, meaning that 100% of white people under white supremacy should be prospering, 100% of black people should not be prospering. And as you can see throughout American history, that just has not been the case. There's never been a case where it's been 100% white people out here prospering, doing their thing at the expense of black people. It has not happened, because, and we'll learn in this episode, that there have been free blacks, there have been prominent blacks, there have been rich blacks, there have been educated blacks, there have been teachers, etc., etc., in America before, during, and after slavery. That is a fact about American history, okay? It's one of the hardest pills that we had to swallow, because we are taught in school that there were slaves, right? And because we don't ever hear about any black people in this era during slavery, we, just through common sense, or at least what we perceive to be common sense, assumes that all black people were enslaved. That's not the case. We also assume that all white people were racist and slave owners. Also not the case. So now you have late teens, 20s, 30-year-old people speaking so broadly about racism, race relations, white and black relations throughout this entire country, as if it is something as simple as you're black, you're inferior, I'm white, and I'm better, and that's how everybody treats it. That's not how it goes. You are not factoring in the slaves that taught slave masters geometry, algebra, finances. You do not can take into the consideration all of the mulatto slave children who went to school with white kids, who went to college, who lived a better life even as a slave. You're not factoring in, and these are not just isolated people that we're talking about. These are dozens and hundreds and even thousands of people who live like this. So I say all of that to say this: we need to find out the truth. And through my studies and through my journey, I happened upon this man by the name of Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell is an economist. He's an educator. He's a Stanford fellow. Great man. And he wrote a book by the name of Black Rednecks and White Liberals. That's where I get the title for this podcast for. The book details the socioeconomic, political, dating hundreds of years back in America. It's a very, very dope book. And I felt like this information needs to be spread further. Because one of the things that I did notice, that when I started to bring this book up, more white people knew this book than black people. And now, let's not get it misconstrued. Black people know history books. They read books from W.E.B. Du Bois, Thurgood Marshall. They read books from Frederick Douglass. They read books about Malcolm X. They read books about Martin Luther King, James Baldwin. We understand history books in Black America. We understand it. We definitely love the history books that teaches about slavery, teaches about Jim Crow, teaches about oppression, teaches us about the negative things that were going on in Black America. You dig what I'm saying? That's what we gravitate towards because it's a more dramatic scene. That's exactly why you'll see more and more movies talking about the negative shit in these eras of American history for black people. Then you'll hear about Samuel B. Fuller. You hear about Madam C.J. Walker. You won't hear about these people in the same rate or even at all compared to the downtrodden, oppressed, beaten down narratives of black people of these eras. So this book is very important. And we're going to jump right into it. We're going to debunk a lot of shit. We're going to be able to get to the truth. And I really want you guys to understand this. A lot of the behaviors that we consider real nigga shit is white nigga shit. All right? So, Pete, these people are creating a terrible problem in our cities. They can't or won't hold a job. They flout the law constantly and neglect their children. They drink too much and their moral standards were shame and alley cat. For some reason or other, they absolutely refuse to accommodate themselves to any kind of decent, civilized life. This quote was from 1956 in Indianapolis. I ask you, as you're listening, who do you think this quote was about in terms of racial groups? White or black? The answer is white. White people in the North could not stand or could not understand why Southern whites were so trash. They could not understand the type of culture that they were proud of, the type of culture that they come from. They could not understand their behaviors, their values, their beliefs, the way they acted in the community. They could not. A 1951 survey in Detroit conveyed that 21% of the people that were surveyed considered white Southerners as undesirables. They didn't want them there. They didn't want them in Detroit. They didn't want them in the cities. They didn't want them in the communities. Versus, as opposed to 13% of Southern blacks. So let's pause here for a second. You mean to tell me in 1951 in Detroit, whites were more undesirable than blacks? That's not what I learned in school. I learned that black people were treated poorly because of racism. Because white people believed that they were better than black people. But it says here, that public perception, the way the public looked at these people, was that they were the bottom of the barrel. That they weren't, they didn't see white supremacy, or they didn't see a brother, they didn't see a sister. They seen a Southern backwards person. They didn't respect them. And in the same vein, the black people that came from this area were less undesirable. Meaning that people were way more willing to deal with black people from the South than white people from the South. In the late 1940s, a Chicago employer told the guard at the plant, you know, at the gate of the plant, at the front door, to tell any hillbilly that there were no openings. White people are discriminating against other white people because of their culture, their behavior. I don't want no hillbilly in my job. It's going to bring the morale down. His ethics and the things that he does on the job, I don't want that to affect all of the productive men and women on my staff. Black or white, he's going to bring the morale down. I don't want him around. Tell him that we have no openings. When Southern whites moved up north, landlords, once they heard their accent, was like, oh, nah, we actually don't have any openings. Miraculously, out of nowhere. It was all cool when he seen his face. Maybe it was because he's a white dude, right? But as soon as that man or that woman opened their mouth and they heard that accent, They was like, oh no. Oh no, we'll rather give our apartment to a northern black before we give it to a southern white. That's a fact. That white redneck culture that you see, maybe personified through things like Honey Boo Boo, or Larry the Cable Guy, or Jeff Foxworthy, or all of these white southern redneck culture figures that comes from the South, actually did not originate in the South. Actually, it didn't even originate in America. This behavior, this redneck cracker culture, was created in the British Isles centuries before they even came to America. North Britain, bordering the Scottish Highlands, bordering the Irish Islands. These are the people that perpetuated this type of behavior. They spoke differently. They behaved differently. The way they pursued education and finance, the way they pursued sex and relationships, the way they pursued religion, the way they pursued violence. Overall, this redneck culture comes from these places, and it was totally different than any other civilized population in this area of Europe. When you had people who were way more hoity-toity, if you want to use that term. If they were more fancy, they were more refined, they were more educated, they were more wealthy. They knew how to till the land better. They operated at a higher level than these Northern Britons, than these Scottish Highlanders, than these Irishmen in certain isles. They call them the British Isles. These people in these areas then migrated to the south of the United States and continued that culture. The funny thing about it is that just a few years after these rednecks, these crackers, moved from their English and Irish and Scottish homelands, those same places began to be more civilized and culturalized because of the higher class of people surrounding them, wanting to basically civilize them to live a better life. And those areas now are way better as far as culture, behavior, education, wealth, etc. But too bad, so sad for the American South. Because what we have are a bunch of riffraff. We got a bunch of ghetto whites populating the southern part of the country. And like I said, they spoke differently. Their churches, their roads, their homes, the music, education, their sex lives were completely, vastly different than the other whites from other parts of Europe, from the other blacks, from other citizens, period, in the country. It just didn't operate like that. And this behavior influenced millions, millions of people, white and black. It doesn't matter. They influenced millions of Americans at this time. What was so crazy about all of this, foreigners and out-of-towners can see the differences. So when you're traveling from another part of Europe, Asia, any other continents, even if you're just going along the highways and the railways from the north to the south, you'll see the cultural differences just by looking out your window and meeting the people and talking to the people. You'll see it. You'll see more industrialized and upright businesses. You'll see people greeting and dealing with each other on a higher level in the north. And then you travel all the way down to the south and you see these people and the way they behave. You're like, whoa, this is nothing like they acted in Maryland. This is nothing like how they acted in New York or Pennsylvania or D.C. It's nothing like it. And they saw it. Now, people will have you believe that these differences in culture are because of slavery. But that can't be true if that 100 years before slavery in America was a thing, these people were behaving like this. How could we blame it on slavery? It's not slavery's fault that you guys come from this area and been acting like that. Even, I give you guys a little thing that I learned in this book, that the burning of a cross in somebody's yard, the way the KKK does it or did it back in those days, you know where that came from? The Scottish Highlands. When they had beef with somebody in a rival clan, that's what they would do. They would burn a cross. They would burn a cross in their enemy's yard to let them know that's where they at. To let them know, to give them a sign. The same reason that they do it to, the KKK did it to blacks in the South. So here's the immigration. So you have East Anglia. Those people migrated to Massachusetts. And then South and West England, those people migrated to Virginia. The northern borderlands, which was where the common people lived, they moved, of course, to the South. And then the Scottish and the Irish lands, which were lawless. When I say the northern borderlands and the Scottish and Irish places, these are the places that, you know, the culture comes from. These places back then were lawless. People, you know, settled disputes on their own. There was barely any police out there. It was just the Wild West, if you want to call it. Those people migrated to Western Pennsylvania. Now, one of the things that stuck out to me is the lack of quote-unquote unity among whites, because this dismantles the white supremacy narrative. Now, if the number one ideal, if the number one objective for these vicious, vile white people was to push the superiority of the white race, why would they discriminate against their own? Why would they go to war with their own? Why would they kill and hang and lynch their own if this is supposed to be white supremacy? When you hear white supremacy, you hear that there is an agenda for white people to dominate every other race and that all of their white counterparts will prosper from it. But clearly that's not the case here. A traveler described these areas in Europe as some of the most disorderly inhabitants of a deeply disordered land. Now, hey, maybe where you are from in these areas of Britain and Scotland and Ireland, you may have needed to behave this way, right? Maybe that's just the way of the land and you had to survive. Just like, think about Chicago. Yes, you would want them to put the gun down, but if they got murder beef and in any day, any hour, any minute they could get killed, would you put your gun down? You wouldn't. You would keep that gun to make sure that you're safe. So here come these crackers coming out, migrating with that same attitude and brought it to America, thinking they needed to keep that tradition alive and that culture alive. Now, this culture wasn't just violent and promiscuous. This culture also had a deep aversion to work. They were lazy. They did not want to work. They didn't want a job. You understand? Robert E. Lee quoted himself saying that the Southern man is too proud to get a job. We are too proud to get a damn job. That's the Southern way of thinking overall. That's crazy. So yes, aversion to work, prone to violence, neglected education, sexual promiscuity, drunkenness, lack of entrepreneurship, reckless searches for excitement, lively music and dance, and a style of religious oratory that was incredibly loud and boisterous and very, very braggadocious, very self-dramatization. They had touchy pride. They were vain and boastful. Huh. Man, sounds like to me this a lot of this nigga shit is this white nigga shit. Think about it. How many beefs you been in where it was dead ass just because of a look? Or a nigga might have brushed up against you in a way that you didn't like. Or it was over something petty. How many people have you lost through homicide over some bullshit? Touchy pride. Vanity. He said something to me, I gotta end him. He said something about me, I gotta kill him. They told me that meant you was a real nigga. This is some white European shit. Another example of this behavior is when an Englishman who was tired of the shitty job the Southern white man gave him in building a house or whatever, he hired somebody else, maybe another Englishman, maybe a black man who could get the job done. And you know what that white man did? You know what that cracker did? He's like, you know, I'm coming back with some men and 20 rifles. Either you gonna kill me or I'm gonna kill you. Pause for another second. This white man, this white cracker, was willing to die over a job because he felt he was being disrespected and he can't go out like no bitch. So you know what? I'm gonna come back with my gang, with the Gats, and we're gonna shoot it out. I know I didn't do a good job. I know I don't even want the job. I know that money really ain't the motivation for me. I don't give a shit about building a house or doing any work. But the fact that you fired me gives me reason to shoot your ass. Sounds real familiar, my G. Let's not front here. This is a truthful podcast. Dueling, shootouts came from these Southern whites. Deadass, They were either scrapping or shooting each other when it came to beef. Nobody talked it out. I mean, think about it, yo. Southerners dueled all the time. Southerners shot at each other over the slightest shit. Think about it, yo. Think about when you in the club and somebody spill a drink on you. You tough, he tough, y'all got y'all crews. Somebody gotta get shot. That's being challenged to a duel. Now, you know, you may have seen it in a more dignified way with two dandies in suits and top hats, and there I challenge you to a duel and takes his glove off and smacks the man. But no, they got that from the crackers who shot out over anything they felt like it. Now, I know, going back to this whole white supremacy thing, that even in the South, whites must have been together and banded together for white supremacy to keep the black man down, to keep the black slave down. They must have had to. Actually, slave owners hated Southern whites and would pay more than what the land was worth if they lived next to them to buy them out. So if you're a slave owner, you dig what I'm saying? You don't even want the riffraff in your neighborhood. You are a whole slave owner. And for some reason, you have more morals than your white Southern neighbor who may not even have slaves. He's just there. I know I enslave a bunch of niggas. I know I enslave a bunch of blacks. But he gotta go. Your land is only worth $50. I'm gonna give you $75 for you to get the hell out of here. Now, because just looking at a white man, you can't tell if he's Southern or Northern. So there was no way to discriminate against race. Now, this is rich or prominent Northern whites in the South or prominent Southern whites thinking of a way to discriminate against their own kind because of cultural differences. And they're like, damn, well, we can't do it by race because I'm white. How can I discriminate against these people? And what they did it by last names. So if you were like an Edwards or something like that, you know, depending on your last name is what gave you access or in access to these places. They have records in like Harvard where the first class of people didn't have a certain type of last name. I can't remember the last name. So we can't discriminate you against the way you look, but your name is your name. That's where you come from. So we can judge you on that. Now, I know a lot of people like to think that lynching is a black thing, that whites lynched blacks predominantly. Whites would lynch other whites all of the time. Because again, they tried to rid themselves of this cracker culture as much as they could. And it wasn't until blacks were freed from slavery that blacks were even on the radar for lynchings. And I also want to point out the rednecks, okay? The white niggas were doing the lynchings on blacks. Because they're a rowdy bunch. They're a violent, lazy, ridiculous bunch of people. Okay? So you had Northern whites lynching Southern whites like crazy. Because why would you lynch a slave? That's ridiculous. If you had a horse or if you had a type of animal that you used and it disobeyed you or it did something that you didn't like, you wouldn't kill it because it produces wealth for you. So you wouldn't kill a slave for economic reasons. You could totally hate the slave's guts. You could be the most inhumane, dehumanizing slave owner out there, but you're not going to kill it because that's killing your business. So even if it's only for self-interest, you're not going to hang slaves unless under extreme circumstances like a rebellion or something that you needed to show as an example to keep other slaves in line. And I know you guys are hearing me talk about slavery like it's so arbitrary or whatever, but you got to understand is that slavery is shitty no matter who was doing it. And I'm not going to behave like white people are the worst enslavers out here because they're not. They're really not. Historically, they have enslaved people for a shorter time than other black or brown people. That's a fact. So if I'm going to go extra, extra, super duper hard against whites, I got to go extra, 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 extra hard at the Arabs. Extra, 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 extra hard at the Asians. Extra, extra, extra hard at Africans themselves. I hate slavery. I'm totally against it. But one thing I do know is that people have been nitpicking and cherry picking the type of shit they want to get mad at when it comes to white people, especially American history, that white people are the scum of the earth based upon slavery, Jim Crow oppression, racism, etc., etc. And I agree that racism, oppression, slavery, etc., etc. is terrible things. I do understand that throughout the time of American history, while this stuff was happening, that there were, one, free blacks out there doing their thing, two, whites weren't the most vicious at doing this shit, and three, black people had slaves too. So I can look at slavery from an objective point of view. Because, first of all, I'm not in bondage. I don't have any personal attachment to these stories. I know a lot of people my age and in my generation would love to feel like they're in those shoes. That's why Hidden Figures. That's why Django. That's why 12 Years a Slave. The Butler. The Help. And all these other movies are so dope to these people because they get to feel it. They feel like they're in the cockpit of slavery. They feel like they're in the cockpit of Jim Crow. That they can finally visualize. Because, you know, the way you see things means a lot. So now they can see a picture of what life must have been like for a black man or a black woman. And I can identify with that. And that's what they want to identify with. You dig what I'm saying? So these movies gives them that. And it puts them in the seat to be like, yo, yeah, this is the life that I would be living if I lived back then. Not knowing their lineage. Not knowing that maybe in their lifetime or in their lineage, their family were prominent blacks. Free blacks. Dating back to 1500. Only 5% of slaves from Africa went to Europe and America. Only 5%. The other 95% went to Middle Eastern countries, where your Arabs are. They went to other Asian nations. That's where they went. They went to different parts of the world. As far as the United States and Europe is concerned, they only have 5% of African slaves. Crackers were willing to die over the smallest shit. And we see that in the ghetto all the time. They had another way of handling beef, which we're familiar with. Rough and tumble. Now, if they weren't shooting at each other over small differences, they were scrapping, viciously scrapping with each other over small differences. So they had this thing called rough and tumble. Now, in rough and tumble, what it was is that you pretty much, no holds barred, could beat the living shit out of the person that you're fighting and be cheered on for it. People would love you for it. So you and a man have a disagreement, you spill a drink. Neither one of you got your pistols on you. Even though you have pistols, you don't got them on you today. And you can't let this slide. He spilled the drink on you. So you call him out. Small crowd forms around y'all because people love a good scrap. This is the culture. Understand, this is the culture. So any fight could break out and people know exactly what to do. They know how to act accordingly because we love for a good fight. So we could be in the middle of church, we could be in the middle of the road, we can be in the middle of a birthday party, a graduation, whatever the hell it is, we're going to form a little ring around you two and we're going to get it cracking. So they say you want to do a fair and right, fair and square, or rough and tumble. Now, more often than not, these niggas, white niggas, were going to pick rough and tumble because the crowd, they wanted the crowd to get involved. So as soon as they said rough and tumble, ah, yeah, it's lit, all of that nigger shit, right? All of that cracker shit. So we biting off noses, we tearing off ears, we ripping off tongues, we doing wild stuff. We doing wild stuff in the town square to settle our differences. What makes this even crazier is that this was okay on a judicial level, meaning that courthouses were cool with this shit, yo. So we run that example. We keep running with that example. You done bit an ear off, you tore the nostrils off of your opponent. He may even have broken his leg. And remember, this is over a spilled drink. The man takes you to court and says, Your Honor, he beat the dog shit out of me over something small. I can't believe this has happened. I wanted to sue for damages. The offender would say, Your Honor, what would you do? This man disrespected me. What else was I supposed to do? And the judge looks it over, thinks to himself, because he's a Southern cracker white, and it's like, he's right. I would have ripped your ear off too. Matter of fact, I would have ripped both of your ears off for spilling that drink on me. Not guilty. People was getting away with catching bodies all day long. Murder, She Wrote. So imagine now for a second, you could get away with murder for real. And you could settle all of your beefs with killing somebody and the judge would be like, yeah, I would have killed them too. This is what the courtrooms is like. This is what the hearings were like. This is the judicial system in the southern part of America. Very, very crazy. Moving on. Economic activity. Now, you know this is my forte. You know, this is my area of interest. This is what I like to know. I like to see what people are spending their money on. I like to see how much a group of people are having, accumulating. I love the money talk. And I wanted to know how these Southern whites gave it up. I wanted to know on an economic level how these people were living, right? So let's see. Southern whites were poor and sucked at the building industry. That's what I wrote down. You know, basically, they weren't industrialized. They just were not making forward progress on an economic level. They were terrible at making money. They had no idea about financial literacy. They had no idea about commerce and making a living. So this is what you got. You had a quote from somebody of the time that says, Southern whites were too poor to keep slaves and too proud to work. Too proud to work. You believe that? You know what that reminds me of? All of these people who complain about immigrants and all of these people who complain about immigrants, and they're talking about jobs and all this other stuff. And they basically say how illegals do jobs that nobody wants to do. And think about that. Think about being an American person with no money, no skills, absolutely no expertise in anything whatsoever, and then having the audacity to turn down a job. And then have the gall on top of that to complain about oppression. It's crazy. So you had an aversion to work, like we just already said. People were too proud to work. Poor whites used to grow small patches of like corn and sweet potatoes. The women and children did most of the work. The women and children did most of the work. Let's pause for a second. Who else in America's communities have women and children who do most of the work? Not going to say no names. Not going to say no race. But let's keep it 100. The single mothers out here breaking their backs to put food on the table. The children who have to raise their siblings because their mom is breaking their neck to put food on the table. The men during this time were either idle or drunk. So that means the men, they were either doing nothing or getting drunk. This is the men that we're talking about. These are the cracker men. This is their behaviors. Of course, these same men were the same rough and tumble, dueling kind. So they were violent and ridiculous. Another quote from the time says, they work little and that little badly. They earn little, they sell little, they buy little, and they have little. The only time you saw good businesses in this time, people, was if the Southern business was run by a Northern white, a foreigner, or a Jew. You know, a term for that time said either that it was Yankee owned or Yankee trained. So you had bad plantations and good plantations. This is another distinction that people don't like to delve into when we're talking about slavery. You had people that ran a tight ship. You had people who had a good plantation. Now, let me make it perfectly clear. I understand that slavery is wrong. I hope I don't have to reiterate that. Okay? But business is business. Okay? Just hear it out. There were good plantations and there were bad plantations based upon their economic performance. Period. If they had used horses instead of African slaves, it still would have been the same thing. You dig what I'm saying? Because the work ethic of these people vastly contrasted each other. So these Southern whites, the crackers, they would aimlessly hunt for meat, not grow their own food. They were said to be people who ate meat without bread, meaning that they didn't have enough sense to grow wheat to make bread. But they could hunt down a horse or whatever, a cow or something, and eat it. Like, for instance, their cows. 40% of all dairy cows lived in the South. But Southern farmers, these white guys, man, they only produce 20% of the butter and just 1% of the cheese. Come on, yo. Come on. You got 40% of the dairy cows, B, and you only producing 20% of butter and 1% of cheese? Terrible at business. You guys are terrible. You're not even using your livestock for what they're supposed to be used for. And I don't even eat dairy. That's crazy. Sad, man. Sad. They just didn't want to make money. Northerners wanted dairy. And the Southerners just didn't sell it. You know who did sell it? Germans and other Europeans that came through in other regions. They industrialized the dairy production, okay, by housing the cows in the winter. Southern whites, the crackers, they would let their cows roam all winter, go without feeding them and all of that other stuff. So by the time it was time for the cows to start producing milk again, you got to feed them just to get them back to the average weight of a cow because you're lazy and didn't build a stable and didn't build a barn for your cows to live in the winter months. Laziness. Ridiculous. So the Germans and other Europeans was out there whopping up. It's crazy. The economic activity of these crackers was wild, man. So let's talk about intellectual activity. Now, it's painstakingly clear about the results that you're going to hear off top. We already know that we can't expect much from Southern whites, but let's hear it out. Over the course of 18,000 records, studies show from the 17th century that nearly half of all white male Virginians were illiterate, were so illiterate, they couldn't even sign their own name. There were no bookstores in the South whatsoever. I am talking about mass illiteracy, okay? Just a region full of dummies who can't read, okay? The Northern whites who had property or lived in the South, they had to get their books from New England. Thomas Jefferson, okay? The soon-to-be president or later-to-be president was like, yo, there's no bookstores at all down here. He couldn't find any bookstores. The census of 1850, more than one-fifth of the Southern whites were illiterate versus less than 1% of the Northern whites, you know, specifically in New England, you know, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, Rhode Island, Connecticut, etc. In the same way that we just talked about, you know, economics in the South, who do you think created the cotton gin? Yep, a Northerner. A Northerner. Somebody who does not even have the visual representation of cotton in their face every day, like the Southern white has, created the cotton gin. Instead of the Southern man who's been around cotton for decades and been around cotton for years, couldn't even think of the cotton gin, couldn't even think of a machine that would help them produce cotton better. In 1852, 8% of patents went to Southern whites, which is only one-third of the white population. During World War I, Southern white soldiers scored lower on mental tests than black soldiers from the North. Be clear, okay? You know, I know this goes against your white supremacist oppression racism narrative, but yes, there were smarter blacks, more capable blacks in the North than whites in the South. That's a fact because of the cultural differences, okay? I know everybody has taught you in school that we were first cargo on a ship, then slaves on a field, and then victims on the street, but that's not how it is, man. It's not how the whole story is, at least. So that's the intellectual activity of these crackers, of these rednecks. So when we're talking about us feeling inferior on the intellectual level because we see Harvard Institute, we see Stanford, Princeton, and all these other places, and we feel like, man, these places are created by white people. I'm not white. White people go to this school. Mostly white people go to these schools. So that gotta mean that mostly white people are smart. Or that I'm dumber than white people. Not so, man. Not so. That's just not what happened. It's a cultural difference. If your culture supports and pursues and promotes education, that's what you're gonna get. But if they pride themselves in fighting over words and shooting each other over bullshit, that's what you're going to get as well. Now, this next segment is very special to me. Now, as you can see, we're only talking about Southern whites. We have not gotten into blacks yet. I may chime in here and there with black parallels, but we haven't even gotten to the black part. This is still Southern whites. Now, the sexual activity of the Southern white is wild. Okay, very casual sex, very promiscuous, very reckless. You dig what I'm saying? Sex was very, very reckless. Also coming from these same places in Europe and bringing it over into the American South. Pregnant brides, women who were pregnant at their wedding was very rare in the 17th century in New England. But according to a minister who officiated a bunch of weddings in the South, said that 9/10, 90% of the weddings he went to were of a man and a pregnant bride. Meaning that these men were shooting the club up all crazy before they even got married. Now, I personally am not against having sex before marriage. It's lit. I love sex. However, I plan on getting married. I'm literally engaged. And I want to have sex with this woman for the rest of my life and create more children. And doing that will make my family bigger, will make me happier, will make my wife happier, us more prosperous in the long run because we'll have children producing and being productive in society, etc., etc. Because we are a nuclear family unit. And this is what I'm happy about. However, when you have people making life-changing decisions like making a baby before they have solidified a lifelong union with each other, this is a problem that you see in the community, whether you're white or black, when you have single parents running rampant, period. I don't care if you're a single mother or a single father. It's illogical to be a single parent. And when you do not make a lifelong commitment with somebody before you make a child, this is how much easier it is to break up your family. Because you barely know this person. People jump into relationships and have babies almost instantly because of the affinity they have for sex. Not the affinity that they have for each other. Not even for the affinity that they have for the sex with each other. It's the sex itself. Because if it was like that, they would want to just keep having sex with this one person. But they don't. They want to keep having sex. And this is where you get your multiple bodies and you get the arguing about body counts and all that other stuff. You accumulate all these sexual partners because you're having sex for the thrill of sex, not because you're having sex with somebody who is giving you bomb sex. It's the sex that grabs you, not the actual penis or vagina that you will be connecting with. Women dress more revealingly in the South, and both sexes spoke more freely about sex. Now, pause for a second here. Think about it. When you're reading the timeline and you know exactly what I'm talking about, when you're reading the timeline and you see all of these sexually liberated people who want to talk about eating ass and sucking dick from the back and, you know what I'm saying, having sex in cars and nutting this and all of that other stuff, right? A lot of them are Southerners. And at this point, it's 2017, so the mixture between Southern and Northern blacks is not so separated or segregated or black and white as it once was because of the migration. And we'll get into the migration part later on in the episode. But dead ass, sexual promiscuity and the way that people talk about it on the timeline reminds me of these same cracker whites of the South. They brag about it all the time. You know, it's crazy. I'm a grown man, heterosexual man, but I know how long another man's dick is on the timeline because he wants to tweet about it. I know exactly what makes a woman come because she tweeted about it. People just talk about it all crazy. It's wild, yo. And, you know, do what you do. Just understand you look weird. Think about it like this. Twitter is the public, right? Just look at Twitter like the public. Would you literally sit in the middle of a mall within earshot of everybody that can hear you or whatever and just start talking about your vagina? No. At least I hope you wouldn't. Anyway, fornication and rape were severely punished in New England. You dig what I'm saying? So not only were people waiting to get married to, you know, have wild, crazy sex, it was socially looked down upon, and you could actually go to jail for this shit, especially if you raped somebody. Rape was a huge high offense, yo. They used to hang you for that. Now, these evil people are getting away with rape, only doing 6 months here, 3 months here, a year here. Back in the day, Northern whites used to hang rapists. The average married age for a Virginia woman was 17. The average age for a New England woman was like 21. You know what I'm saying? They dealt with more pressing matters than getting married. Maybe education. Maybe finance. Maybe business. Maybe politics. Who knows? But women were more preoccupied with themselves and getting themselves established before they got married. Now, when you read these numbers are still pretty low. You're talking about 17 years old in the South and 21 in the North. So by 21, women were ready to be married because throughout their adolescents and teens, late teens, they were getting themselves together. They went to school, they went to church, they were, you know, doing the best that they can. Now, when it comes to religion, that plays a huge part in this Northern-Southern thing. You dig what I'm saying? Now, white Southerners were Baptists and Methodists. White Northerners were Puritans. Southern white churches would be on that T.D. Jakes shit. Southern white churches would be on that loud, self-dramatized tip, you know, the way we see a lot of black churches today. You know, you look at any of these preachers. I forgot a lot of the names because I really detached myself from the church over a decade ago. I'll never forget it. I was 16 and my mom asked me if I wanted to go to church, and I could give an answer, and she let me stay home, and I was just like, this is lit. I had a great time not going to church. Started going back when we moved to North Carolina, ironically, because this is the South, and my mom loves church, and the South loves church. Like, it's crazy. I think North Carolina is considered the Bible Belt, which is, wow. But anyway, so Southern white churches was on that preaching, ha, and we're on the podcast, ha, and I'm reading off this paper, ha, and all of that other stuff. That was the swag that they had. You know what I'm saying? They rarely met in churches. They were more on like the outside camps and stuff like that. And you see that a lot too when you look at old depictions of churches and stuff like that in movies or in pictures or in books or whatever. It's usually an outside type of thing. Or that video, like this dove, it was outside. It wasn't like an inside church. You feel me? I think that was a funeral though. I don't know. But anyway, moving on. So Southern whites, they cried aloud, you know, at the utmost stretches of their voice. Strong imagination, dramatic. They repeated their words over and over again. They moved violently. They was catching their breath like crazy. And you know what's so crazy about this? Politicians and activists, if you remember, you know, think about like Martin Luther King. You dig what I'm saying? Even the cadences of like Fred Hampton. He had those same type of cadences. Now, Fred Hampton is a G, and he was a Chicago dude. So that northern swag, you know, mixed in with that. You dig what I'm saying? And he went to one of his entire, a different political regime altogether than even assimilating with America. So shout out to Fred Hampton. But those same oratory skills, or them same oratory hitting points, those same cadences came from the white Southern church. Now, Northern churches were a bit different. Absolutely, completely different, honestly. Puritans, they did more of a deep reasoning thing where people just sat and listened to somebody speak. It wasn't being yelled at them, and it wasn't as dramatic and loud and, you know, all of these things. They sat there. They will be more inclined to give you business tips. They will be more inclined to give you education tips to how to, you know, strengthen your household and do things better in society. They were more of a meet and greet type of situation rather than somebody just screaming at them for 2 hours. But don't get it twisted, though. These are the same people that did shit like the Salem witch trials and all of that other stuff. So it's not that their religion was without sin or their religion was without negativity or whatever. It's just that in comparison to the Southern whites, the Puritans just had a deeper reasoning when it comes to stuff. Now, half of the Southern white congregation went there just for the dramatics. And I think about my career in the church, and that's pretty much what it was. I remember preachers asking other preachers, like, what was the crowd like at the church? They didn't even consider the congregation a congregation. They considered it a crowd, as if to say that this was like a concert or something, that just to have seats filled. The other half, they went to socialize and have sex with each other, really. They used to go there, and I can attest to that, too. I got a lot of sex from women in church. I don't know what it is about Southern churches or whatever, or even Northern churches at this point, because like I said, the mixture is just, it's there now. It's just hundreds of years later. But I don't know what it is. Church girls are literally the most horniest girls I've ever experienced in my younger ages. It's wild. We went to conventions and we had groupies and all that, because, you know, I played the drums or whatever. So women were throwing their panties off, yo, right after church. So you would go to church, everybody get all, you know, filled up with the spirit, quote unquote, be all hyped up. And then you would slide and be like, yo, so what you getting into after church? Blah, 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 blah. Meet me at the Waffle House. We're going to meet up at the Waffle House and we're going to go back to the hotel. And we're going to have sex like crazy and then go to church in the morning because we're on vacation at a church convention. And it was very, very lit off the strength of that. You dig what I'm saying? And on top of that, back then, many Southerners really went to church. You know why? Because they were too drunk on Saturday to go. Wow, man. So that is the white redneck culture. Those are the crackers. That's so crazy. I still find it bugged out that we did not come up with the term cracker. We did not come up with that term. That came from the English, man. They called these Northern Britons and they called these Irishmen and these Scottish crackers because, you know, it's the crack wise. They always had something to say back. They always had something to argue about. They were real, real combative. They was real, you know, they love confrontation. That's the type of people that they were. And this culture, first of all, came from another country, lasted for hundreds of years, and then influenced millions of people, mainly black people. And the reason why this is the most troubling is because such a small group of white people influenced such a large group of black people. Like I said, only 1/3 of white Americans lived in the South at this time, but 9/10 of black Americans lived in the South at this time. So we only had 33% of white people down there, but we had 90% of black people down there. And they were picking up this lingo. They were picking up these work ethics. They were picking up this religion. They was picking up this work, you know, they were picking up all of these things. And now this is what we have today. The black redneck, the nignog. This is what we have. And we're going to get into that on part two of this podcast, Black Rednecks and White Liberals 2017. Stay tuned.
Talk about a new whip, nigga, like I'm a slave master. I pull a 2-zip, nigga, I feelin' way better. I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better. Talk about a new whip, nigga, like I'm a slave master. I pull a 2-zip, nigga, I feeling way better. I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better.
Yeah. So that was episode 16.5, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, part one. You know what I'm saying? I hope you guys soaked up some gems. I hope you guys learned something. Appreciate you guys listening. This outro is not really that long. I mean, I pretty much laid it all out there. Just make sure y'all stay tuned. This is going to be a dope trilogy right here. For real, I'm going to walk you through this entire book, especially the meat and potatoes of the literature. You know, hopefully to help y'all move about the country in a different way. Maybe, you know, knock some of that insecurity that you have off of your skin. To be proud of where you come from. And to be proud and not let these people or history or the people who try to tell you history muddy up who you are, what you are. You feel me? That go for white and black. You get what I'm saying? Like, I always go back to that Fred Hampton quote. White power to white people, black power to black people, yellow power to yellow people, red power to red people, off top. So the thing is with me, I'm not a victim, so I'm not ashamed or I'm not insecure about white people having power or having money. Because all I know is if I really wanted to combat it or if I really felt like it was a problem, all I had to do was just gain power on my own. I'm just trying to show y'all how the people that y'all look up to with blue checks next to their name, or they made a dope documentary series, or they're a feminist, or they're a public speaker, or whatever, like, that white supremacy shit don't really shake when you put it up the screw in it. You dig what I'm saying? So, thank you guys for listening again. Make sure you guys stick around for part two and part three of this. I may even take it even further, who knows, but I know it's at least three that's coming out of here. And as always, man, stay intelligent and stay rebellious.
I'm feeling way better. I'm feeling way better.
Brooklyn rap, what is it? Got my jeweler rhyme with me. Do it for double, he gone. Do it for double, he gone.